You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio at every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on both Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide via the Free Speech TV Network. More people watch or listen to the Tom Hartman Program on more stations and outlets than any other progressive talk show in the world. And we're having fun. Welcome to the program. And the Attorney General of the great state of California, Kamala Harris, is with us. General Harris, Attorney General Harris, welcome to the program. Thank you. We're so pleased to have you with us. I think that it's important to point out that the Obama's campaign is actually running an ad in some swing states pointing out that Florida was won or lost, depending on how you look at it, by 537 votes. I mean, there are those of us who think we really should be looking 2 months earlier at Catherine Harris knocking 60 to 80,000 African Americans off the voting rolls in Florida and Jeb Bush making sure that happened. But, you know, setting that aside, it is important that people get out and vote. Every vote is really vital. First of all, I'd love to hear you riff on that. And second, and my follow-up question, I'll tell you in advance, would be, what do you say to somebody who lives in California, your state, the state where you're the Attorney General? I had a Democrat called me yesterday from California and said, this state's going to vote, you know, the Electoral College is going to vote for Barack Obama, so why should I bother?
So on the first point, great to be on your show, Tom. On the first point, I'm in North Carolina, and I was just in Raleigh meeting with various groups, and they pointed out that we won, meaning the president won North Carolina 4 years ago, and when you crunch the numbers, it was by 5 votes in each precinct.
Wow.
That's how close it was.
Right? 5 votes in each precinct.
Right, so there's my riff on that. Each vote counts.
Yeah.
On the point about California, I'd say vote in California early like I did, and then head to Nevada.
Well, you can't go there to vote, though. That's not what you're suggesting.
No,
you're suggesting help out.
Go at home and then go to Nevada.
Yeah, okay.
But the point is this. Yes, we have the Electoral College, and it's, you know, you win the whole state, but the reality of it is, there are many reasons why everyone should vote, and it has everything to do with just a simple concept, which is that your vote is your voice.
Right.
And we need all the voices to be heard, because if we want the issues to be heard, the voices have to be heard first.
Well, I have a theory on this. I'd like to reality test with you. George W. Bush lost to Al Gore by over 500,000 votes in the popular vote. And in a very real way, until 9/11, the first 8-9 months of his presidency, he was not viewed, I mean, you know, in part because of the whole Supreme Court thing and what happened in Florida, but mostly because Al Gore got 500,000 more votes than he did, popular votes. He was not viewed as a legitimate president, and he was having a real hard time getting any kind of, you know, he wanted to privatize Social Security on day one, and, he couldn't even get a conversation going about that. And so... if President Obama were to be reelected in the Electoral College and not have also a majority of votes in the popular vote, because people in blue states didn't bother to show up figuring, hey, my state's going to vote for him anyway, why should I? That would be a bad thing.
I agree with you. And the bottom line is that, you know, there are a few things that we can do that just reinforce hopefully the integrity for ourselves and for others of our democratic system. And I'm going to tell you, maybe it sounds corny, but when I go to vote, it just makes me feel so proud to be an American.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I walk around with that little sticker, I just voted.
Yep.
And it just makes me feel good. That one, and for a number of reasons, not, you know, some of which has to do with the fact that, listen, I am an African American woman.
Mm-hmm.
So people fought and some died for my right to vote. And we can't take that lightly. People have been excluded even through tactics by some states in this election cycle. There have been tactics to suppress the vote.
Yes.
Because that the bottom point of the line there is because each individual's vote is, it has value. But people don't try and take away something that it doesn't have value.
Yeah.
Right? It has
well
value. And so let's reinforce our knowledge of that fact. Mm. Even if we are in California, and yes, Barack Obama is going to take the state of California.
Yeah, we're talking.
Even if we are in California, let's pay honor to and respect the value of each person's vote. Because if you're in some other state, there are a whole lot of people trying to keep you from exercising that right.
Right.
And so, in solidarity, let's all go out and vote. If not,
yes. And add to the legitimacy of his presidency by, hey, look at how many votes I got. I just think that
right.
there's something to be said for that. That's really important. You are not only the Attorney General of the great state of California, Kamala Harris, you are also one of the people who fought so hard against the banksters to help underwater homeowners. Tell me about that and where we're at right now.
Well, thank you. So I was one of it ended up being 49 attorneys general who signed on to the multi-state, and which resulted in $25 billion approximately being divided up between the states.
Mm-hmm.
To give relief to homeowners who had been, frankly, victimized in the foreclosure process. Essentially, there was an investigation that was done that showed that the five big banks engaged in robo-signing, so they foreclosed upon families without doing the due diligence to determine if that really should have been what happened. Initially, California was not being offered what I thought would have been commensurate and fair in terms of the deal.
Mm.
So I pulled California out of the national discussion, but I ended up allowing it to happen when we were able to bring $18 billion back to California, $12 billion specifically for principal reduction. So in California, I hired a monitor specifically for the state, but we also, by the national settlement, hired a national monitor. And so we have been monitoring the rollout of the settlement. And what we are seeing is that there has been good progress.
That's great.
Principal reductions, we are seeing refinancing occur, and to some extent we're seeing the housing market start to turn course and improve.
So in your state, that money is actually being used to help underwater homeowners. I understand in some other states, particularly some of the red states, apparently Scott Walker up in Wisconsin and other governors have used a pile of money that was intended for underwater homeowners for their state budget so that they can claim that they've balanced the budget. And they've just basically put it in the state budget. Is that the same money that we're talking about here, or is that a different pile of money?
So there were different piles or different sections for different purposes
mm-hmm.
as part of the national settlement for each state. The deal we negotiated for California was that we would have a commitment that a certain amount of it, the vast majority of it, would go to principal reduction.
Right.
And that couldn't be tinkered with. There was another amount of money that each of the states received that was intended to go directly to help with the counseling of homeowners and to help them through, mostly what I wanted to do is give it to nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you frankly, it's a nonpartisan issue in terms of what each state has been facing
mm-hmm.
In terms of the budget crisis, and each governor has had to make difficult choices. I mean, Jerry Brown, my governor, has had to make difficult choices.
Yeah,
and,
they're tough.
And everyone's had to take some pain, unfortunately. So, yeah, there are many states where the governors have taken some part, if not all, of the money that was supposed to go to counseling, which was a small percentage of the total money.
Very interesting. Attorney General Kamala Harris, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for all your work.
And thanks for being out there on the campaign trail to help keep this country democratic.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. I want to get into something really interesting about polling and how the poll right now might be real similar to the poll of 1936 and why.
Must be the season of the witch, yeah. Must be the season of the witch.
Well, close. It's Halloween. Halloween, witches, this whole idea of witches, actually, the witches used to be the good people. They were the midwives and the herbalists, the crone used to be a good word. I'm talking about hundreds of years ago. And there were the female wise elders of the village and the community. And this whole thing of witches and broomsticks and the obvious Freudian symbolism thereof has to do with men marginalizing and making evil the women who were the herbalists, who were they were competition for the male doctors. So, anyhow, here's a question. I've got a couple of questions for you that I would be very interested in taking your calls and comments on. The first is, here we have now two events, one by Mitt Romney, one by Paul Ryan, in the last 24 hours, where they were gathering canned goods to presumably send to people who are in trouble in New Jersey. They were doing this in Wisconsin and Ohio. And it turned out that the Romney campaign had actually, bought $5,000 worth of canned goods to give to people as they came in so that those people could then hand them back to Romney and Paul Ryan and this other one in Wisconsin so that they could be seen stacking these goods up. Now, this at the same time that the Red Cross is saying, please don't send us canned goods. We don't have a loading dock on the back where we can take your old clothes or your dented cans or even your brand new cans. Send us cash. And we will buy those cans from the closest place that sells them to the place where the disaster is, so we don't have to run a truck all the way from Ohio to New Jersey filled with cans of peanut butter. So we don't want your cans. But Romney and Ryan are out saying, bring your canned goods in. And by the way, if you don't, we'll give you some at the door so we'll have a nice photo op. This is cynical partisan politics. So my first question is, do you have any recollection, because I can't come up with one, do you have any recollection of a time in America's history where any candidate was this nakedly cynical about the political process? This kind of a photo op, which is the opposite, doing the opposite of what the Red Cross is asking people to do just so they could have the photo op. I can't think of any. Democrat, Republican, Green, Libertarian, I don't care the party. I can't think of a time when there was a candidate who was so cynical, other than possibly Richard Nixon saying he had a secret plan to end the Vietnam War in the election of 72, right after Watergate broke. The investigations into Watergate, of course, didn't happen until after the election, the really serious ones, so we didn't know. But it looked like he was a crook. But he said, yeah, now I got the secret plan to end the war. And, within a year he was out of office because he was a liar. He was a crook. But, maybe that's not even as outrageous, because saying you got a secret plan to end the war, I mean, that might just be hopeful thinking or wishful thinking. But piling up cancer, that's question number one. Do you know of any time when there has been a politician running for national political office or for president who has behaved in such a cynical fashion? Question number two. I found this just fascinating. Salvador Babones, and my apologies, Salvador, if I'm mispronouncing your name. I don't know him personally. He writes for Truthout, truthout.org. I also write for Truthout, among other sites, but they put our news up every day. And it's a great website, truthout.org. He wrote this fascinating piece. I found this absolutely compelling. The headline is Political Polling is No Longer Meaningful. And he points out that in the 1936 election, and we played a lot of clips from the 36 election, this was when Franklin Roosevelt was running against Alf Landon, Republican Alf Landon. And a national poll was done by the Literary Digest in 1936. They interviewed 2.4 million people. Now, keep in mind, the average poll today interviews about 1,000 people. And says it has a margin of error of plus or minus 3% or so. You interviewed 2.4 million people in the United States, and this was back when the U.S. population was only in the neighborhood of 100 million people. You interviewed 2.4 million people. You've got a margin of error rate of zero. And that poll in 1936 overwhelmingly showed that Alf Landon was going to beat the pants off Franklin Roosevelt. Roosevelt was going to be sent packing and the New Deal with him. It was the end of the Democratic Party. That's what the poll showed. The poll was completely wrong. It happened again in 48. Same kind of polling was done. In 1948, they did the same kind of polling, and they and the results were indisputable. Thomas Dewey, the Republican, is going to win. And who won? Harry Truman. You know, famous picture of him, you know, in that car with the convertible car holding the newspaper as he's in the parade, the newspaper with the headline, I think it was the Chicago Tribune, said, you know, Landon wins by a landslide or whatever it was, you know, Alf Landon wins. Or excuse me, Thomas Dewey wins. Dewey wins. Dewey beats Truman. What was the problem with these polls? The problem with these polls was that they were both done using this newfangled device called the telephone. And in 1936, the only people who owned telephones were rich people. So you call 2.4 million of them, and they are all Republicans. Of course they're going to say that they're going to vote for Alf Landon, for the Republican. And by 48, still, most of the people who had single-line telephones, not, I mean, I remember as a little kid in the 50s, my parents, you know, if it rang three times, it was us, right? I remember my grandparents had this kind of phone up until the 60s. You know, the party line phones, you pick up the phone, you could hear the other people having their conversation. One ring is our home, two rings is the next door neighbor. Those they didn't call those kind of lines to poll people. They only called the independent lines. And that's how they got the results. Well, here's where it is now. We have seen the number of people who respond to, you know, now that we've got caller ID, which we've had just for a decade or two. People look at their caller ID, and if they see no name that they recognize or they see an 800 number, when I see that, I don't answer the phone. I let it roll into voicemail. Figure, hey, it's not critical. I'll call them back later. As a result of this, we have seen telephone responses in the last 15 years, according to Pew, drop from 36% 15 years ago to 9% today. Could it be that our polls are useless?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I mean, seriously, think about it. You think America's really about to make a pirate equity manager president of the United States? I think our polls are useless. What do you think? Indeed. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Actually, you know who's in the sky today is Barack Obama and Chris Christie. Let me riff on that in just a second. At some point during the show today, Shano, in his infinite caprice, this is Shane in his caprice mood, posture. Say that again. Capricious. At his most capricious. Is going to say, that caller, and somebody's going to get a copy of my book, Cracking the Code, How to Win Hearts, Change Minds, and Restore America's Original Vision. This is the book that contains the chapter that details what the real difference is between progressives and conservatives and how it all started in 1634, as I recall, with Thomas Hobbes. And, you know, where it all got to here and how people think and why people think politically and what we can do. It's a book on political messaging, but it's also a book on the history of politics in the world and in the United States, particularly in Western civilization. I think it's fascinating. It's called Cracking the Code, and we will give away a copy of that today to Shano's, the caller that Shano selects. Now, I mentioned Chris Christie, and then we're going to take your calls on A, have you ever seen anything as cynical as this? And, which is, you know, really pushing it. And B, when you get a call and from a 1-800 number or a blocked call or a private call, a private number, or even a number you don't know, do you take it? Have you ignored any polls? Have you, I'm pretty sure that, you know, Louise got one. It was a week or two ago, somebody called and said that they were with a polling group and they wanted to ask some questions. And she just said, no, thanks, and hung up the phone. And we were busy. I mean, we were doing other things. I don't know if she would have taken the call if she was just, you know, quiet and alone or not. But in any case, the thought that came to my mind wasn't that, hey, that was a poll. We just had an opportunity to participate in a poll. My guess was that it was a push poll, that it was going to be some, you know, because there's so many of these things. I mean, there's robo push polls. There's human push polls. I'll bet that there's more push poll calls than there are real poll calls. Push polls are where they call up and they say, given that Barack Obama cut $716 billion out of Medicare and the program is going down in flames, are you going to vote for him again? You know, when in fact he didn't actually cut that money out of Medicare. He cut that money out of Medicare Advantage monies going to United Healthcare and other for-profit insurance companies and gave that money back to back to Medicare so it could actually use it. I mean, he actually improved Medicare. He strengthened Medicare, made it live longer. But, you know, that doesn't stop the lie from the Romneys and the Republicans. So, anyhow, in 36, Alf Landon overwhelmingly was going to win, according to the polls. In 1948, Thomas Dewey was overwhelmingly going to win, according to the polls, because they were using telephones. Are they still accurate today? Oh, and as I mentioned, Chris Christie and President Obama flying around in the helicopter over New Jersey and talking today. President Obama's new best friend, or Chris Christie's new best friend, I'm not sure which. There is a little bit of political calculation here to attend to. First of all, New Jersey is the hardest hit state, so it makes perfect sense that the president would go there if he wants to see what's going on. This is what George W. Bush should have done with New Orleans instead of going to have to literally let them eat cake with John McCain, instead of going to John McCain's birthday party and then going out to California for a fundraiser with a country western star. And then finally, George Bush flew over Katrina and looked out the window, that famous photo op. So, I think it's important that the president be there and see what's going on. He's the commander in chief. He's in charge of FEMA, ultimately, and making these things happen. But Chris Christie, I remember watching his speech, his keynote speech at the Republican National Convention, and turning to Louise and saying, this is not a speech in support of Mitt Romney. This is a speech in support of Chris Christie in 2016. Now, if Mitt Romney wins the White House, Chris Christie will not be able to run for president in 2016. He'll have to wait until 2020, which is a long way away. And he'll be a lot older. And he may not even be governor of New Jersey or have a political platform anymore. I mean, that 4 years from now might be his last chance. Not to mention the fact that either next year or the year after, Chris Christie's up for re-election in a state that typically elects Democrats. New Jersey's a blue state. He's a Republican. So, you know, giving a big bear hug to the president is not going to hurt Chris Christie's reelection chances, number one. And number two, if the president beats Mitt Romney, that's going to increase the probabilities of Chris Christie being the Republican Party's nominee in 2016. Or at least its vice presidential nominee behind Jeb Bush. So we'll see. Time will tell and all that kind of stuff. We'll see. But this seems to me like one of those kind of things where, you know, it's a win-win. The president wins. He's seen as being bipartisan. He's with, you know, a prominent Republican and one of the most important and famous spokespeople for the Romney campaign who is speaking well of him. And Chris Christie wins because, you know, if Romney is elected president, then Chris Christie gets to act like, you know, he gets to get reelected as governor because he acted like he was above politics. He was more concerned about his state. And, you know, Romney's not going to squash him like a bug or anything. I mean, he's done a lot for Romney. And if Romney isn't elected, then Chris Christie is positioned to run. So we'll see how it goes. Howard in Miami. Hey, Howard, what's on your mind today?
Oh, a bunch of things. First of all I can do Pick is applaud one, Chris Christie because I admire a man of principle. Sticks by what he believes in.
One of the things that I think that you have to say about Chris Christie, other than the fact that he's supporting Mitt Romney when Romney was a liberal, Chris Christie didn't support Mitt Romney, is that generally speaking, he's consistent. But nobody who supports Romney can claim to consistency. So anyhow, what's your point? What's your call about?
I wish somebody would offer a reward of like $62.50 or some significant number for the person who arranges Donald Trump's hair every morning. Just so that can be put in perspective. I don't understand why the media, I guess it's just ultimate laziness that it's so easy to just use whatever this guy says to fill up print space.
Well, you know, we don't have news in this country anymore. We have infotainment and Donald Trump is a clown. He's entertaining. So,
yeah.
You know, were you listening when I told the story of when Louise and I met Donald Trump?
Oh, no.
Oh, this was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It was the one where Obama took down Trump, where, you know.
Oh, I love that.
It was incredible.
So
and we were in the pre-correspondents' dinner party that the Washington Post was holding downstairs. And Louise and I are standing there with a glass of wine, chatting with some friends of ours. And in comes the entourage, the Donald with the attractive woman on his arm, I think his current number five or six wife, I don't know what she is. and his two security guards, you know, big burly guys with the earpieces in their ears. And, you know, he's just basically, he's there, and the room is packed, and you can walk up to him. I mean, you know, if you tried to poke him or something, I'm sure one of the security guys would have taken you down. And Louise is like, I got to check this out. And so we just kind of worked our way over and got about 3 feet from him. And she just, you know, takes a really, really good look and turns to me and says in a quite loud voice, which is uncharacteristic of my wife, plug's gone bad.
I love it. I tell you, my two fondest memories of Trump are in that White House Chris Fuller dinner when Obama said, you know, those are the kinds of decisions that keep me up at night. That look on Trump's face, and the look on his face the other night on Letterman when Letterman pointed out that all his clothes that he's,
are made in China. Right. Yeah. China. Yeah, that was hysterical. Anyhow, I got a bunch of callers here, Howard. I want to get to them. You wanted to call about polling.
Right. As far as the polls are concerned, I don't. They are about as relevant and important to me as, like, the fact-checkers, because I think that they're all basically constructed in the way that the pollsters want to construct them to reach the result they want to reach. Because Rasmussen's always the same. Gallup always seems to be the same. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, it may well be. My concern, and thank you, Howard, for your point, my concern is that the technology that they used that worked so well for them for several decades, I mean, if at first it created a clear bias because only wealthy people or the upper middle class had telephones in the 30s and 40s. But then through the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, pretty much everybody had a telephone, and polls were actually fairly accurate. But now more people have cell phones than regular landline phones, and even landline phones are sophisticated enough, many of them, that they have caller ID. And so I think people aren't taking the pollers' calls. And therefore, if you're – what kind of person answers a phone when it says it's from a 1-800 number? A person who is either has way too much time on their hands or isn't real bright. And that's who's being polled. Is that a representative sample of America? Richard in Utica, Mississippi. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind?
Oh, I'm doing good. I just wanted to let you know when I became skeptical about the politics of life was to San Diego. I was a school bus driver, and the Secret Service SUVs were stolen, two of them.
Whoa. And, what year was this?
That was with Bush Sr. And
the Secret Service had their cars stolen in San Diego?
Yes, they did.
How did I miss that?
They did. And their weapons were missing. They never found them.
That's hysterical.
I think so. And then when Bush Jr. came in, and I heard him say about the war in Iraq, that they tried to kill my dad. That's all I needed to know.
Yeah.
I was like, you confirmed your father's idiocy.
Yeah. Just well, and this is the thing. George W. Bush lied us into two wars that have cost us, more people than died in 9/11. And tens of thousands of injuries, hundreds of thousands of dead Iraqis and Afghans, and destroyed our reputation in the Middle East, contaminated millions of people with depleted uranium. He lied us into these things. Do we really want another liar as president? Consider these ads that are running in Ohio right now saying that Chrysler's going to move their Jeep production to China. Chrysler's having to come out and say, no, sorry. GM says Ronnie's in an alternative universe.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Somehow I think that we just really don't want another liar in chief.
Tom Hartman.
Well handled, sir. Well handled.
Thank you very kindly, sir. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars on our fair but only slightly unbalanced program. Mr. Hawker in Converse, Texas. Mr. Hawker, what's on your mind?
Hey, I'm enjoying the show. I'm listening on the TuneIn Radio app.
Mm-hmm. Great.
The show is great, man. I just want to talk about the polls and the photo ops, man. What really got me as a voter, I already voted. I'm an early voter. Mm-hmm. I already voted here in Texas for President Obama already.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that spoke to me. I'm a combat veteran.
Mm-hmm.
Obama was always talking about recertification of the combat nurse that didn't really need that recertification because he had that training from the military.
Right.
And that spoke to me as a voter. For a president to know that is very important for me, especially with his Sandy. I mean, there's a lot of unemployment veterans that they can call out to right now. The photo ops of these LMTVs on these streets is what moves me.
Right. That's well, you know, a year ago, the president proposed a jobs plan that would have hired, I think my recollection is in the neighborhood of about 1 million people with federal funds to address federal needs, which would include things like FEMA. At the time, it was mostly, you know, let's rebuild our bridges and our roads and let's help out the states with infrastructure. But obviously, they'd be available for FEMA. And they were going to give priority hiring to unemployed veterans. This was a brilliant plan. It would have reduced unemployment down to around 6%. It would have started the economy. It would have gotten America moving. It would have put a lot of our unemployed vets back to work. They could have been right now at storm ground zero in New Jersey helping out. The Republicans blocked it in the Senate, and the Republicans in the House of Representatives, who control the House of Representatives, refused to even allow it to come to the floor for a vote. So I think that kind of tells you where the Republican Party is at when it comes to this kind of thing. Mr. Hawker, thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. Jim in Blackwood, New Jersey. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I kind of wonder if it's not too late, if maybe President Obama could dump Joe Biden and bring Governor Christie on board as his running mate.
Oh, come on. interesting joke, Jim. Thank you very much. Ain't going to happen, but thank you. Gary in Albuquerque, New Mexico. What's on your mind, Gary?
Well, Willard Romney might be telling the truth about Chrysler Jeeps to China.
Well, he's not telling the truth. Chrysler is actually expanding their Chinese operations, but they're doing it to sell Jeeps in China, made in China, to the Chinese. They're also expanding their U.S. operations, and, you know, Romney's basically lying about it.
Well, Bain is actually in the process of buying Chrysler, so he knows what he's doing.
Really? No. Chrysler's owned by Fiat right now, isn't it? Weren't they sold by Cerebras to Fiat? They were sold to Cerebras by one of the German companies, Daimler.
Willard has said that he knows what's going on. Bain is buying Chrysler. They will be sending the jobs to China.
Yeah, well, if Bain buys Chrysler, they will. I think that's right. Thanks, Gary, for the call. I haven't heard that one. George in Ada, Ohio. Hey, George, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I watch you all the time. It's good to get through.
Thank you.
When it comes down to the poll calls and all that nonsense, For years I've just left my voicemail full, so I just don't have to deal with it. And you're right, any 800 number, 877s, any of that, I just don't answer it.
Right. So which begs the question, if the polls show that the race is 50-50, and I was asking this a couple of days ago. In fact, I've been asking it out loud, you know, kind of saying it out loud to myself and to you for weeks now. How is it possible that in America, where we actually, you know, we have a public education system, people are fairly well educated in this country compared to most of the rest of the world, relatively speaking anyway, how can it be that half the nation is preparing to vote for a private equity, you know, a vulture equity firm CEO to be president of the United States? It makes no sense. Mitt Romney, who's been all over every issue, could it be that half of America is not planning on voting for Mitt Romney? It's just that the polls, in order to respond to a poll, you have to be one of those 9%. They get a 9% response rate. 91% of people who get a call from a pollster don't take the call. So you have to be one of those 9% of people who will answer no matter who is calling you. And that says to me that's either people who are not discriminating particularly, you know, not particularly, you know, thoughtful about who they're taking calls from, or people who have a lot of time on their hands. And is that representative of the American electorate? I don't think so. I think the American electorate is up to their eyeballs in work and trying to get work and other things like that. George, thank you for the call. Very interesting. Bob in Skokie, Illinois. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how are you this afternoon?
I'm great, but I'll get better.
Good.
What about you, Bob?
I write about market research for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And you make some good points. And you know, first of all, the last question that you've been posing to people about how could people be voting for Romney, I just think most people really aren't even paying attention. The fact that he could put out the Jeep ad, the Jeep assertion, the TV ad, the radio ad,
right,
tells you how, well, maybe the word dopey is going too far, but how uninformed you know, the country really is.
Well, it is a testimonial to the power of the industry that I used to work in, advertising. I used to own an ad agency, and there's a reason why advertising is a multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry, because companies that advertise get results and make more sales. Politicians who advertise get votes and become elected. And if the more money to spend on advertising, the more ads you can run, the more likely you are to win the election or win the argument. And now you got the Koch brothers, you know, pouring in $100 million. You got, you know, the Chamber of Commerce. You've got Shelley Adelson, you know, with his money from China. You got all these, you know, outside groups, all of them, the vast majority of them anyway, supporting the Republicans in this election. That might have something to do with why the polls are showing so close, but it could just be that we've got flawed polling technology now.
I disagree with you about that. Yes, there are some polls, I will agree with you, that you could have real questions about. For instance, it's well known that Rasmussen doesn't call any cell phones.
Yeah.
And so he's...
I think they need to go back to the way they did it in the 19-aughts and the 19-teens,
yeah,
which is sending out people to go door-to-door and knock on people's doors.
Yeah, but we're not talking about, you know, I agree with you 95% of the time. We're not talking about 1936 and calling people on telephones who are only rich in 1948. We're talking about something that's become a lot more sophisticated.
But who is that 9% who answers the phone from anybody who calls?
That's a very good question that we in the research industry ask ourselves all the time.
As you know what sample bias is. I mean, you work in this business.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. I think there's substantial sample bias built into this thing, and I think it's screwing it up. But, you know, time will tell. We'll find out in a week. Thank you, Bob.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour, and happy Halloween to Seton Motley. Seton Motley, the president of Less Government, lessgovernment.org. Seton, great to have you back with us.
You sound like every department store around my house. They're already putting up Thanksgiving and Christmas stuff, so.
Well, Christmas stuff I'm ready for. You know, I could handle that for 3 months out of the year. I kind of like it. But Thanksgiving,
you know, like the Thanksgiving turkeys and the pumpkins and all that stuff.
No, the pumpkins are fine. You know, I haven't eaten turkey since I was a teenager. So,
I'm a big fan of fowl. So,
okay, Mr. Bird. I question for you.
Yes, sir.
When I was at 4 years ago, when I was at the Conservative Political Action Conference, there was a broad consensus among conservatives like yourselves, like yourself, that Mitt Romney was such a flip-flopper. He had been this liberal governor of a liberal state. He had taken every position on earth. He twisted himself into a pretzel 16 times over, and that was before he became a severe conservative. And now he's running these ads in Ohio saying that Jeep, which actually is manufacturing and is increasing their manufacturing of Chrysler, of Jeeps, in China, but this is for the domestic Chinese market, that instead Romney actually said this, clip number 5, at a rally. This is just a plain old flat-out lie. Listen to Seton.
I saw a story today that one of the great manufacturers in this state, Jeep, now owned by the Italians, is thinking of moving all production to China.
Well, in fact, when he was asked, when his campaign was asked, where'd you see the story? They said, we can't tell you. There was no such story that said, you know, that. They said what he said. And he has refused to answer any reporters' questions about this whatsoever. How can you support a guy who's a serial liar?
Well, he's not a serial liar. First of all, Jeep has been considering moving to China. He said he was there.
According to whom?
About it. He was exactly right.
According to whom?
According to Jeep.
No, according to Jeep, they are expanding their Chinese production, but they're not moving anything out of Ohio. In fact, they sent out a letter to all their employees yesterday, an email, because people were freaked out because of Romney's lie, saying, sorry, this is not true. You got the president of GM saying we're now in a parallel universe. Romney's living in a parallel universe.
You mean Government Motors is defending sugar daddy government? Really? That's a shocker.
It would be
breaking news. Government Motors
It's not called Government Motors, Seton. If you want to have any credibility, you ought to call GM GM. It's what it is. Number one. And number two,
it's Government Motors. We own 26%.
There's a lot of good Republicans who work for GM.
We own 26% of it. And by the way, the GM wanted to get out from under, and Obama won't let them sell the stock.
This is about whether President Obama.
What about that?
About,
yeah. What about
this
that?
This is about
Tom?
Mitt Romney
they
being a serial liar.
Seton,
how can you support? How can you support a serial liar for president? I don't understand it. I mean, the long list of lies that Mitt Romney has told.
GM has been lying about the Chevy Volt for 3 years now. So the fact that the GM issued a statement...
The Chevy Volt is doing just fine, and then we're not talking about the Chevy Volt. We're talking about Mitt Romney being a serial liar. You can change the subject as often as you want and as much as you want, but I'm going to keep bringing it back to the fact that Mitt Romney is lying, has, you know, over and over and over again is telling all these lies.
About what? Instead of just saying he's lying, about what has he lied repeatedly?
Well,
to make him a serial liar?
Let me play this clip again. Here we go. Clip number 5.
I saw a story today. The one of the great manufacturers in this state.
They are thinking
Jeep,
about it, Tom.
Now owned by the Italians, is thinking of moving all production to China.
And then
they are thinking about it, Tom.
And then
articles about
no,
it.
No, that's nonsense.
I read this stuff all the time, Tom.
And
they've been talking about it. He said they're thinking about it. He didn't say they're doing it.
If this is true, why doesn't his campaign produce the story?
What?
What newspaper did you read this story in?
Several auto blogs. Several auto stores.
You read it in a blog, so it must be true.
Well, no, I've read it in several auto industry blogs. Yeah. They've been contemplating.
Some blogger told
you. Seven out of ten GM cars are manufactured outside the United States right now.
Some blogger told you this.
No, 7 out of 10 cars. You know where I got this?
That's because it's a worldwide company. They're selling things worldwide.
They're not selling them worldwide. They're making them worldwide. 7 out of 10 cars per Obama appointee CEO Dan Akerson, GM, 7 out of 10 cars are manufactured outside the United States. 7 out of 10. Right now. That's before Jeep contemplates moving.
Okay, so then Mitt Romney does a photo op where he says, bring some cans to Ohio to our photo op and up in Wisconsin. You got Paul Ryan doing the same thing. Bring some canned goods. The Red Cross says, we don't want any canned goods. We don't have people to handle them. We don't have people to support them. We don't want to transport them.
We didn't want boats in Katrina, and people died as a result. So Red Cross is not the bulletproof experts on all
FEMA
things.
FEMA doesn't want canned goods. Nobody wants canned goods from Ohio sent to New Jersey. By the time they get to New Jersey, the cost of transportation is greater than the canned goods.
The guy for helping
and
out
then
the
he's
places.
Standing out in front with the you know the people who are coming in. They don't have cans in their hands. And they don't have cans in their hands. And the Romney campaign is saying. And the Romney campaign is saying to these guys, you don't have a can here. We bought $5,000 worth of canned goods. Here, have some canned goods.
You know how desperate you sound that you're criticizing Mitt Romney for turning a campaign event into a rally to help people in a disaster?
In which they bought their own $5,000 worth of stuff to pass out?
You know how pathetic and desperate you sound?
You can try your ad hominems all day long, Seton. You can call me names. It doesn't distract from the fact that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are doing these political stunts that really, I think, are hurting them. I don't understand how people like you can actually want to vote for this guy.
Let's look at the numbers, Tom. How's Mitt Romney doing with women? Dead even with Barack Obama.
You don't have any idea, Seton.
Yes, we do.
You think that the 9%? Let me ask you just a reasonable question here, and please let me finish my sentence. What we have seen in the last 15 years, according to Pew. And this isn't a partisan thing. I know you may not like Pew, but what we've seen, and there's a consensus, whether it's Rasmussen or whether it's Pew or whether it's somebody else, is that the percentage of people who answer the phone when they're polled has gone from 36% down to 9%. Only 9% of Americans are willing to take a phone call because now we've got this thing called caller ID that wasn't widely distributed 15 years ago across the United States. Only 9% of Americans are willing to take a call from some total stranger or an 800 number. Do you really believe that 9% of people who have nothing better to do than answer a phone call from somebody they have no idea who it is, it might be a telemarketer, that is going to provide a representative sample and give you accurate numbers about Obama, Romney, or anybody else?
Crap. Do you want me to be a guest, or do you want to just have a soliloquy without me being here? Where was Bill Clinton campaigning yesterday? Minnesota, which hasn't gone Republican in like 30 years. Reagan won 49 states. He lost Minnesota. And Bill Clinton is campaigning in Minnesota to clean up Obama's mess.
What does this have to do with whether or not that 9% of people who answer the phone
because
are giving
Obama's
us any kind of useful information?
And they have to shore up support in Minnesota. And
so
Michigan,
you're not going to answer that question either.
You're not
going
to
answer the question about whether you'd vote for a guy
Romney
who's a serial liar.
A campaign rally to help people.
You're not
going to
answer the question about what
the desperate, pathetic nature of the Democrat.
You're going to call me names
and the Obama support
and try to shout me down. And you think that, but you're not going to answer the question about how you can vote for a guy who changes his position on just about everything.
Are you
in favor of the Romney who's
in
support of
Obama closing Guantanamo Bay?
Obama tried to do that. Congress wouldn't authorize it. The Republicans filibustered the money.
He issued an executive order the first 3 days he was in office. He could have done it any time he wanted.
You have to have the money to do that kind of thing. You have to have a place to put those people's seat. You know that. You know that the Republicans blocked that effort.
No, the Republicans didn't have any power back then. 3 days into office, the Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and he didn't do it for two years.
For 2 months and 1 day. Until Scott Brown was sworn in. And Obama lost his filibuster-proof
Senate. The Obama era is almost over. Revel in it.
Nice shouting over you, Seton. Thanks a lot for being with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, you know, would you take a call from a total stranger? Are you being polled? Have you taken a poll call? Well, happy Halloween, and James Hoffa is with us, James P. Hoffa, the attorney and general president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, their website, of course, teamster.org. President Hoffa, welcome back to the program.
Well, it's great to be here, Tom.
Great to have you with us. I'm curious your thoughts on, you know, now both auto companies, Chrysler and General Motors, have issued statements saying, sorry, Romney doesn't speak for us, essentially calling him a liar. And yet, Romney's doubling down on these lies. They've got a new radio ad out suggesting, now they've gotten, this one apparently has gone through the lawyers. It doesn't say that Jeep is moving jobs to China. It simply says, you know, that they're expanding their Chinese operations in a way that makes you think that they're moving the jobs to China. In fact, they're not. What's your take on all this?
Well, I'm from Michigan, the auto center of the United States, and, you know, everything he's done has been wrong from the beginning. When he wrote that editorial in the New York Times that's saying that let Detroit go bankrupt, you know, he's been wrong ever since, but the interesting thing is he hasn't backed off. I think we all know that the loans to the auto companies, to Chrysler and General Motors, basically save the auto industry. Today we have a thriving auto industry of Ford, Chrysler, and General Motors. We're producing the best cars in the world. We're producing record amounts of cars. We're putting shifts on. Thousands of people have gone back to work. So he doesn't know how to deal with that. That has a tremendous impact both in Michigan and Ohio, you know, two key states. So he's coming up with these rather absurd things about, you know, that they're going to make the Jeep in China, which has been denied by Chrysler. I mean, I don't know where he's coming up with, but he's wrong. You know, the most interesting thing is he came to Michigan a few months ago, and instead of coming here and, you know, I don't know what he wanted to talk about, he starts talking about how the bailout was wrong.
Right.
To me, that is absolutely the wrong way to campaign in Michigan.
Yeah.
And if this is a big issue also in Ohio, which if everybody's watching Ohio, because 1 in 8 jobs in Ohio are tied to the auto industry. So for him to double down and to be making up these stories about moving stuff to China and it was wrong to save the auto industry, I think that people who have been put back to work are saying, is this guy crazy?
Well, maybe he's crazy like a fox. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't spend a lot of time paying attention to politics. They do watch advertisements on TV and listen to ads on the radio. You've got a huge right-wing radio infrastructure that will support Romney no matter what lie he tells. And, you know, with a lot of listeners, it may be that throwing the most outrageous lies out there, I mean, you know, Franklin Roosevelt famously paraphrased the book Mein Kampf. In fact, here, listen to this. This is Franklin Roosevelt in the election of 1940, I think it was 1940.
the election of 40, as I recall. And in any case, here he is. He's talking about the Republican tactics.
Remember, a number of years ago, there was a book, Mein Kampf.
Mein Kampf.
Written by Hitler himself. The technique was all set out in Hitler's book, and it was copied by the aggressors of Italy and Japan. According to that technique, you should never use a small falsehood. Always a big one. For its very fantastic nature would make it more credible. If only you keep repeating it over and over and over again.
And then he goes on to riff about how the Republicans are doing just that. And it's like, you know, how much time changes and yet things don't change.
Well, I agree. I think that, you know, we've seen tremendous amount of lying and misrepresentations by the Republicans and by Romney in this campaign. You know, the one thing that impresses me is, you know, Obama tells people exactly what he's doing, what his tax plan are, who he wants to raise taxes on, the 2%, what he wants to do with the 98%. He basically lays it right out. When you watch the Republicans and Romney, you never can tell. He talks about, you know, his forefathers. He talks about this. He talks about that. But you never hear him say that I want to privatize Social Security.
Right.
You never hear him say I want to send you a voucher for your Medicare. You never hear him say I want to raise taxes. Cut taxes for the rich. Get rid of the capital gains tax. Get rid of the minimum wage. You never hear him say that because if he ran on that, which he is running on, which is on his website, he couldn't get elected. So you never hear him talk about the real issues. He makes up these fantastic lies about, you know, sending Jeeps or going to make Jeeps in China, which has been absolutely categorically denied by Chrysler. So you're right. It's the big lie theory. And I don't think that's going to work right now. I think we're in the, we got about 6 days to go here. We're in the final stretch in this election. Mm-hmm. And I think these kind of lies are not going to turn the election around right now. I think we've got, you know, a close race here, but I think Obama's going to win it. I think he's going to carry the major states of Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, Ohio, and I think, you know, Illinois, California, and I think he'll be in good shape. It's going to be a closer race, but I think we're going to be able to pull it out.
The new Romney ad says Mitt Romney has a plan to help the auto industry. We went to his website. We're unable to find any plan. Politico asked the campaign for the plan, and they got no answer. Do you have any idea what Romney's plan is for the auto industry?
Well, he doesn't have a plan. That's like he's the same thing about, you know, I have a plan to put people back to work. His plan is for tax cuts for the rich.
So this is sort of like, oh, yeah,
I mean,
of course.
How is that going to put anybody back to work? The rich people are going to get richer. How does that put some guy who's unemployed back to work?
Well, it might help the, you know, a couple of Swiss bankers or somebody down in the Cayman Islands.
Maybe that, or maybe some crumbs will fall off the table when he eats caviar.
Yeah.
But I don't see, you know, this has been pointed out a number of times. He makes all these statements about, you know, 23 million people out of work. But he says, I have a plan, and then you ask him what the plan is, and it's tax cuts for the rich.
Right. Yeah, which is like, you know, really Newt Gingrich's contract with America. 6 out of those 10 things all pointed to the same piece of legislation, which was tax cuts for the rich. It's incredible.
That's right. As Obama said, he doesn't have a 5-point plan. He has a 1-point plan.
Right.
Tax cuts for the rich.
There you go. James P. Hoffa, the international president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, general president. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's always great to get James Hoffa's perspective on things. More on Mitt Romney right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. At some point during the day, Shano is going to have a caprice attack. That'd be right? No, whatever it is. Anyhow, and he's going to pull out one of our callers and say, you, sir or madam, have one is the wrong word, will receive in the mail, brought to you by Stamps.com, a hardcover autographed copy of Tom Hartman's book, Cracking the Code. a book on political messaging and the history of politics, really, in the United States. Okay, Mitt Romney's lies. This is from PolitiFact. We almost ran out of paper printing this thing. It's incredible. I mean, if you had one of those little small printers, you know, the kind of that you have for your home office, we'd be doomed. Okay. It says Barack Obama. We've got an industrial sized printer here, so we're in good shape. Romney says that Barack Obama was silent on Iran when the students took to the streets in Tehran. No, sorry, that's a lie. He said pre-existing conditions are covered under my health care plan, Romney's health care plan. No, sorry, that's a lie. He says Barack Obama put in place a board that can tell people ultimately what treatments they're going to receive. No, sorry, that's a lie. He said college tuition costs have risen by 25% under the Democrats. No, sorry, that's a lie. He says President Obama promised he'd keep unemployment below 8% if the stimulus passed. No, sorry, that's a lie. He says 5 studies show his tax plan can cut rates and still bring the same revenue without raising taxes on the middle class. No, sorry, that's a lie. Mitt Romney says, under Obama, home values in Florida collapsed, construction jobs are lost, the state had a high foreclosure rate. No, sorry, that was under George W. Bush. It was actually started in 2006, the housing bubble started bursting. Mitt Romney says, Joe Biden is, quote, Mitt Romney says that he's quoting Joe Biden saying that coal is more dangerous than terrorists. No, sorry, it's a lie. He says Barack Obama robbed Medicare of $716 billion to pay for Obamacare. Sorry, it's a lie. He says in June, jobless ranks were higher in nearly 90% of U.S. cities. No, sorry, Mr. Romney, you are lying again. Romney says President Ronald Reagan sent troops into conflict only in one circumstance, which is in Grenada. We were in a peacekeeping center in Lebanon. No, sorry, it's a lie. He says stimulus dollars paid for windmills from China. No, sorry, it's a lie. He says the total unemployment rate for Hispanic or Latino workers has increased from 10% to 10.3% between January 2009 and March 2012. No, sorry, it's a lie. Mitt Romney says, what president has the worst record on female labor force participation? Barack Obama. Sorry, it's a lie. He says women account for 92.3% of the jobs lost under Obama. Sorry, Mitt Romney, you're lying again. He says Obama has failed to pass a budget. No, sorry, not true. It's not the president's job to pass a budget, actually. It's Congress's job to pass a budget. He says the president could have gotten crippling sanctions against Iran. He did not. No, sorry, he did. And they're actually working right now. The value of the Iranian currency has collapsed. Iranians are freaked out. Their inflation has over 100% right now there because of these crippling sanctions. He told people to come to Las Vegas for convention meetings. Romney says Obama said that. To skip coming to Las Vegas for convention and meetings. Sorry, it's a lie. Romney just makes this stuff up, right? Or it's like so selectively. He says 3 years ago, a newly elected President Obama told America that if Congress approved his plan to borrow nearly $1 trillion, he would hold unemployment below 8%. No, sorry, it's a lie. He never said that. Some of the people on his staff said, you know, we think this will get us below 8%. The president never made that promise. Mitt Romney says more Americans have lost their jobs under Barack Obama than any president in modern history. I suppose it depends on when you start counting. Like, do you count George Bush? Regulations have quadrupled. The rate of regulations quadrupled under this president. No, sorry, it's a lie. He said in 1 year, President Obama provided $90 billion in breaks to the green energy world into solar and wind to Solyndra and Fisker and Tesla and Enery. No, sorry, it's a lie. He says President Obama has doubled the deficit. No, sorry, it's a lie. He's actually reduced the deficit, by the way, over the last 4 years. Mitt Romney says right now the Congressional Budget Office says 20 million people will lose their insurance as Obamacare goes into effect next year. No, sorry, it's a lie. He just makes this stuff up. I have 8 more pages of this, right? I just read you 1 page, 2 pages. I could go on. But I think you got the point. Anyway. It's incredible. Susan in Palmyra, New York. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Great to talk to you. I wanted to talk to you for quite some time, and I'm so appreciative of you.
Thank you.
Palmyra, New York, by the way.
Palmyra.
That's how you pronounce it. And it's the home of Mormonism. So we have a lot of Mormons in our town.
Oh, is this near where Joseph Smith found the golden plates?
Yes. Yes.
Wowie
zowie. We have a lot of Mormonisms in the summer, and there's a Mormon pageant every July.
Right.
And so anyway.
A lot of people running around with metal detectors looking for the leftover plates. Maybe are there a lot of people running around with metal detectors looking for the leftover plates or remnants or? Anyhow, Susan, I wanted to talk about the polls.
But I wanted to talk to you about the polling. I agree with you 100% on that, and no one I know answers 800 calls, and I've talked to a lot of people and asked if they've gotten any polling calls, and no one I know has.
Right.
So yeah. I'm curious also as to who they're talking to.
Yep.
And being in a Mormon town, I'm just surprised we aren't called more.
Yeah, you would think. Susan, thank you for the call. Very interesting. Kathy in Princeton, Wisconsin. Hey, Kathy, you have a theory about the polls?
Yes. Hi, Tom. I enjoy your program immensely.
Thank you.
My theory about the inaccurate poll results, I believe that seniors are being polled more than any other age class. They are home, and I know a lot of seniors that don't have that caller ID. They just go and pick up the phone.
Yeah.
And in our area, I know traditionally, seniors around here have always voted Republican.
Yeah, more likely to, it seems. Although increasingly now that Paul Ryan has said he wants to voucherize Medicare and privatize Social Security, I think a lot of seniors are waking up. But Kathy, excellent point. Thank you. You know, my dad died 6 years ago. He still had a rotary phone. It went click, 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 you know, when you dialed. Because he was like, you know, why should I pay for a newfangled phone? I don't dial that much. I know how to do a rotary phone. No caller ID. Steve in Asheville, New York. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for all you do. Actually, I own a couple of your books, so don't bother trying to get me one.
Okay.
I'll go buy my own. Hey, I don't answer the toll-free numbers either, but I did notice the other day that they were polling at the mall. And so primarily they're still polling people that are white with disposable incomes and are at least working.
Oh, interesting.
I don't see anybody walking around the ghetto polling minorities in the ghetto.
Right.
And I think that they're purposely trying to lean the polls to the white right a little bit, because people like to vote for winners. But also, if they end up stealing the election, they can still say, well, hey, you know, those polls, you know, really showed that there were a lot of people ready to vote for Romney.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you.
Yep. Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it. From Steve to Steve. Steve in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hi, I'm part of the 9%.
Okay, in other words, you take calls from pollers.
I don't pay for TV, cell phones, or caller ID.
Uh-huh.
Maybe my customer calls because I work at home.
Right.
And sometimes I get a poll that is basically, you know, age, race, who are you going to vote for? Have you voted yet? Because early voting, and it's a, you know, push the button. I got one yesterday. There was no pushing. It was straight like scientific, so I answered it.
Oh, interesting. It wasn't a push poll. It was a real poll. So you're
when I hear their push polls, like, are you really? And I, if it's a human asking me questions, as soon as the push detector goes off,
right.
I say, you know, this is a push poll. So why don't you just, you know, hang up, you know, I can detect it, so I don't want to answer any more questions. Have a good day. Bye.
Right. Good one.
You know.
Okay, Steve, thanks for sharing that with us. I appreciate that. It just, you know, you wonder what, well, interesting. Mike in Bothell, Washington. Hey, Mike, what's up?
One of the things I do for a living in all my jobs is I work for one of the major banks, and we do door knocks for people who don't answer their phones. And one of the first things people do when they have a problem with paying their mortgages, they disconnect their landline.
Ah, so then the bank goes out and knocks on their door.
We go out and knock doors for them.
Right.
Other thing is, those are the same people who are getting chased by other people they owe money to, other debt collectors.
Right.
They don't answer their phone. It's a 1-800 number. It's somebody wants money.
So your point is that the unemployed and the people having financial difficulties, which is a large slice of the American electorate right now, are not being polled.
I see 100 to 150 people a month. We go out and knock their doors,
right.
And I ask them to contact the bank because they're not responding. Almost all of them have no landline, and they don't answer their phones.
Amazing. Okay, Mike, thank you very much. That makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. Mary in Langley, Washington. Mary, got a minute to the break. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I actually am also one of the people who never answers 800 calls, so I fit that. And I had the same theory as your earlier caller about older voters. It's my experience that they're so programmed to answer the phone when it rings, and they don't really look at caller ID.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly think they're skewed towards Romney, you know, for race and other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wonder if youth are underrepresented, because I know my daughter has a cell phone, no landline, and right. I think that's pretty typical of that demographic, and they tend to lean more towards Obama. So those are just my two.
Yeah, well, I think you're right.
And, theories.
Yeah, and although there are now increasingly, it is possible for the polling companies to buy these mailing lists of people who have cell phones, but it's basically a kind of a it's a business venture. It's not like the Yellow Pages thing. Everybody with a cell phone number doesn't have their number published. They have to have done something like texted, you know, to answer a poll or texted to donate money to something, or then their phone number gets into the database. Or filled out a form of some kind that got sold, you know. Thank you, Mary, for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, you know, you go to the doctor, you put down your cell phone number, they can sell that information now under the new law. So, well, it's not new. It's from the Bush administration, but you get what I'm talking about.
Love is kind of crazy with a spooky little girl like you.
It's a spooky Halloween. Welcome back, and happy Halloween to Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. If you have not yet, go to free-don.org and find out what I'm talking about. Victoria, happy Halloween.
Boo and woo!
Okay. Why?
This is my favorite holiday.
It is. Oh, are you in costume?
I can't tell you. That's why you can't see me.
Oh, so that's why you're not coming in by Skype today. So we don't get the sneak preview of what you're going to inflict upon the city of Washington, D.C. tonight, or surprise or thrill the city with, depending on how.
It could be too shocking for the news.
Yes.
Indeed.
Okay. All right.
Indeed.
All right.
The Labor Department was closed down on Monday and Tuesday, but reopened today, and the Department of Labor reports that the October jobs report, the most anticipated piece of economic data in the history of economic data, will be released as scheduled on Friday morning at 8:30 a.m.
What happened to the big Republican conspiracy theory that it wasn't going to be released because it would hurt President Obama?
Well, what's happened to that is I think that they're saying that they caved in the wake of so much pressure from the right wing.
Oh, so the...
Or they've already fixed the numbers.
Oh, I see. Okay. So two new conspiracy theories to replace the original one. Got it.
Indeed, indeed. And economists do expect the job figures to show slow, steady employment growth. Probably the unemployment rate remaining about where it is, or it may have ticked up a notch, but with a fairly good number of jobs created. So it's one of those where there could be, you know, quite a decent
news.
Number of jobs created, but so one side will pick that and the other side will pick the actual unemployment number.
Right. Okay.
As we mentioned, conspiracy theories, the White House today shot down rumors that President Obama nixed an operation to rescue U.S. diplomats under attack in Benghazi. National Security Council spokesman Tommy Vita said in an email to the Hill newspaper, neither the president nor anyone in the White House denied any requests for assistance in Benghazi during the attack. Right. The reason Tommy Vita sent that email was because Newt Gingrich told Fox News that he'd been told by a, quote, fairly reliable, unquote, U.S. senator that at least two news networks have emails from the National Security Advisor's office telling a counterterrorism group to stand down. But Gingrich then said, I want to be clear, it's a rumor.
Oh, man. So Gingrich perpetrates a rumor on Fox News, and this is such a horrible and damaging to the administration thing, were it true, that the administration has to come out and say, no, sorry, it's a lie. And Fox News should have from the get-go said, if you're going to say something like this, you should at least back it up. Should they not? Or is it? They have the word news in their name.
Well, they do. They do. And he even says that it's a fairly reliable senator. He doesn't even say it's a very reliable senator. He says it's a fairly
right.
reliable
so
senator.
So it's probably Tom Coburn instead of John McCain.
It could be anybody.
Yeah.
Who knows who it is?
Right. You wonder if it's a fairly reliable state senator in Iowa or something.
Well, that's a good point. He doesn't say what kind of a senator it is either. That's a good point.
Right. It might be some totally obscure person you never heard of from Mississippi.
Precisely. President Obama, as we speak, is touring storm-ravaged New Jersey with Governor Chris Christie, Republican Governor Chris Christie. He will be delivering remarks shortly, which will be carried by the news networks. This, of course, if I speak politically for a moment, will not do him any harm.
Right. And Chris Christie, it won't do him any harm either. He's running for re-election either next year or the year after in a fairly blue state.
Fairly blue state, a state in which his numbers have not been great. I mean, he's touted as a shining light of the Republican Party, and he's one of these people who's a shining light everywhere but at home.
Right, right. Is he? Do you know if he's up for re-election next year or is it the year after?
I thought it was the year after.
Yeah, that makes more sense because usually it's every 2 years. I had read one news story that said next year, and I think it was just a typo.
He also has presidential ambitions, and it might be smart to look at the presidency in 2016 on the back of a successful Democratic president than coming in after a Republican president who's up for re-election.
Right. He would not have much of a chance in 2016 or for that matter, even in 2020, because then Paul Ryan would be running if Romney and Ryan get elected and get reelected. I mean,
exactly.
It really dims Chris Christie's prospects, which is why when I watched his keynote at the Republican National Convention, I turned to Louise and said, this is not about Romney. It was not.
So much in politics is always more obscure.
Yes.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton today said that the Syrian National Council, which is the prominent Syrian opposition umbrella group, shouldn't continue to be seen as heading the movement to remove President Assad. She said, we've made it clear it can no longer be viewed as the visible leader. She says they can be part of a larger opposition, but that opposition must include people from inside Syria and others who have a legitimate voice that needs to be heard. Her remarks reflect U.S. frustration with the SNC, which is a largely expatriate group,
that's
been consumed by infighting and, in the view of U.S. officials, has failed to convey to different Syrian minority groups, particularly Christians and the Alawites of Assad's clan, that they would be protected in a post-Assad future.
So the Syrian opposition, the expat Syrian opposition is not doing so well, and the Obama administration is saying we want to hear from the Syrian internal opposition.
Indeed, very much so. She's saying we want to hear from the Syrians inside the country, and also she also says very strongly that they want to be on record strongly resisting the efforts by extremists to hijack the Syrian revolution.
Right. In other words, we want to hear from the opposition in Syria that doesn't want to turn Syria into the Taliban or whatever it may be. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
We will be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Halloween, All Hallows Eve, Dia de los Muertos. And Dr. Stephen Larson is with us, psychologist, author, founder of the Center for Symbolic Studies. Symbolicstudies.org is the website. An old friend, Stephen. By the way, what's your most recent book, Stephen?
Well, I'm working on a book of dreams now, Tom, called The Little Shaman's Book of Dreams. But the most recent book was called The Neurofeedback Solution, published by our old friends Inner Traditions in about May of 2012.
Yeah, and a brilliant piece of work it is. Stephen, you mentioned that we, I suppose, most modern people, certainly Western society, we are descendants of people for whom the supernatural was their next door neighbor, and we seem to have lost that, although Halloween reminds us every year. Can you riff on that a little?
Well, we exist in a society which is unique among the cultures of the earth, Tom. We don't have any belief in an invisible world next to this one. We don't have very much truck anymore with certainly with places like heaven and hell or the mundo imaginal, the world of spirits right next to this one. And that's quite different if you go to Asia or South America or if you're among traditional people anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to find that those beliefs are alive and well. And we scientifically socialized people call them superstitions, unfortunately.
Right. And what you're talking about is not the, the notion of an afterlife. You're talking about a parallel life, a parallel universe.
The afterlife is a part of it. Now, for many of those societies, there's a different idea than a single tour of duty in time and space, so to speak, and then you either go to heaven or hell or limbo or something like that.
Right.
In many of those traditions, there's an idea of an eternal return, so that nature is a great recycling process rather than a kind of a linear end of time mythology, which leads, of course, to Armageddon paranoia, the idea that the end of the world is coming. And it might have felt like that to the folks in Queens and New Jersey. When I was looking at some of those images of buildings burning and water flooding, I said, for those people, 2012 has arrived.
Yeah, it is the end of the world, and for the people who have died. Why is it that on this day, on Halloween, so many cultures honor that walk between the worlds that we all, as you know, we all sooner or later must do? In other words, the transition from being alive to something else in this physical body.
Well, if we believe any of the esoteric sources or the world's great spiritual traditions, this identity with a body, with a self that wears a body in time and space is misguided, that there is more to us, that we don't, in a sense, die when the body dies, that something in us goes on. And along with that is the idea that we are surrounded right now by invisibles, that our ancestors may be with us just the other side of a veil. We can't hear them talking, but it's amazing that people in modern culture don't believe in invisible things, because right now, I don't know how the hell my voice is reaching you, and
it's an invisible thing. Well, it's like William James. I mean, the famous psychologist is, his quote about, you know, all about us may be other worlds that just with the requisite time. It's been 30 years since I saw this quote. It's in Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now. With just the requisite touch, it will part the filmy veil. You probably know it better than me.
Well, around us lie other forms of consciousness, parted from us by the filmiest of veils, but the lightest touch, and they are there in yes. all their completeness.
Thank you, Stephen.
Yeah, and so when we go into an altered state of consciousness, and one of my jobs is to treat teenagers who have drugged themselves into insensibility, and it's not a very good thing. Even pot is not a very good thing for teenagers because their brains aren't fully formed,
mm-hmm.
and there are lasting kind of developmental problems. You know, they legalized it in England only to make it illegal again because of exactly problems like that. But teenagers in the world of today, they are just fascinated by magic and by the world of the invisibles and by fantasy adventures and all that kind of stuff. That just really, really talks to them.
How does all this translate into Halloween? What's the way we're on to talk about Halloween, and in the 4 minutes or so we have left, your thoughts on this? Where did this come from?
Well, you mentioned the Dia de los Muertos, the idea that when a person is no longer wearing a physical body, it doesn't really feel like they've vanished forever or disappeared into the into a hole in the ground or a funeral pyre or something like that. We feel them, we remember them, we may dream about them. Mm. And so it seems that in some way they are alive and very much with us. In China and throughout the Pan-Asian world, the idea is very present that you worship the ancestors and then they will bless you and send benisons and blessings on you. And that they will, and if you don't do that, it's not so good. You don't neglect the ancestors. You give them offerings. You remember them every so often. And in the South American countries, it's the same thing. The Dia de los Muertos is the day of the dead in which we think about the dearly beloved who have gone on to the other world. It's wonderful that we have a holiday like this.
So Halloween is, in its more original form, part of the pre-Christian? The celebration of the dead?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think it goes way back into Celtic, and there are also Northern European roots for it. And, you know, just about everybody else in the world, Christianity has its own sort of polarized mythology about heaven and hell and angels and demons and all that kind of thing. Right. But it's amazing. If you give a room full of children, particularly, a chance to play angels or demons, you know which they'll choose.
Which will they choose? Demons?
Of course, because with demons, it's more fun to attack each other, to cackle, to jump up and down and say mean things to each other and stuff like that. Angels gets very ethereal and they all kind of waft around in the corners and they don't accomplish
just,
much.
Just sit around on a cloud all day with a I think that's kind of the sad conception of you know, an afterlife that we've been fed. We have a little less than a minute left. We're talking with Dr. Stephen Larson. I'm curious your thoughts on this recent Newsweek cover story, Heaven is Real.
Well, you know, I wrote a letter to Newsweek that they didn't publish because I went through the same kind of death experience that Dr. Eben Alexander went through. I wasn't dead for a week like he was, but I was dead for long enough. There really is an extraordinary experience waiting for us when we die. I know that's not very much believed in our culture, and they attribute it to kind of neuron death in the brain. But there is something out there that is transcendent and is waiting for us.
Well, that's hopeful. Dr. Stephen Larson, the psychologist, author, founder of the Center for Symbolic Studies. Symbolicstudies.org is the website, and great programs that Dr. Larson has there. Check it out. Stephen, thank you so much for being with us today.
I'll be talking to you.
Always great talking with you, too. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, just in time for his Skype to go out. How are you celebrating Halloween today? What do you think about that wall between the worlds?
And suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
Welcome back to All Hallows Eve here on the Tom Hartman Program. Marie in Carbondale, Colorado. Hey, Marie, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to kind of put my two cents in on this, what constitutes life and afterlife. And I'm clergy, and so this is really a Christian clergy, and so this is really an interesting subject for
this
me.
This is your business. As it were.
This is my stock and trade.
Yeah, your vocation and your avocation, presumably.
Yeah. But the older I get, the more I experience in so many different ways. I love what Stephen was just saying about the closeness of the two cycles. You know, for the Navajo, there are these two great wheels, and one wheel is physical life and one wheel is spiritual life. And it's at this time of year, between October and the beginning of the year, that those two wheels come closest and the veil is the thinnest. And if you think about it, this is the time in our society and in a lot of societies throughout history that there have been these great ingatherings of family and not just harvest, but even spring festivals as well.
Right.
But this sense of the ancestors being with us and that they're just not that far off. But for me, what clinches it is theoretical physics.
Yeah.
I believe there's an afterlife because of Einstein.
Yeah.
Who, energy and time and space and matter equal, and they cannot be destroyed.
Right. Who famous Einstein, it's been a lot of years since I tried to pull this quote out. Let's see if I get it right. Religion without science is blind, and science without religion is dead, or words to that effect. Anyway,
something to that effect.
Yeah, yeah. I had the surgery on August 1st, and things did not go so well. And a week later, I ended up back in the hospital, and with my abdomen filling up with liquids that shouldn't be there. And I was really, really sick. And I thought, there was one day where I felt like I was going to die. And my mom appeared next to me and next to the bed. And I had this brief conversation with her. My mother just died a couple of years ago. And I think one of the biggest regrets of my life is my father, he and I talked when he was diagnosed with terminal mesothelioma. We talked some about, what he thought was going to happen when he died. And he had been, and this is when I learned, actually. I mean, he had always taken me to church when I was growing up, a local Methodist church. But this, he said, he just thinks that the lights go out. That's it. It's all over. That he was an agnostic. And I'm convinced that we go into the light, not that the lights go out, but that the lights get a lot brighter, that we become part of everything that is, because I believe that everything that is just a manifestation of consciousness, like as if consciousness was water vapor and everything that we see is the ice cubes floating in a bucket of water, It's just a different frequency.
I'm sorry.
And my biggest regret is that...
collective consciousness.
Yeah, exactly. And my biggest regret is that I was sitting with my father as he was dying, and he'd had a stroke and he couldn't speak, but he was wide awake. And I wanted to say to him, Dad, you're going to go into the light. Just relax. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful thing. But then I thought, he doesn't believe that, and I don't want to be preaching at my own father as he's dying. And so I didn't say anything, and I wish I had. I wish I had said that, because even if I was wrong, it might have given him some solace as he was dying. But it's just, I think of that at least once a week. I think of that it was an interesting time. So,
when my father was passing of a stroke a few years ago, we were all with him, and he kept saying, "Where's Tim? Where's Tim?" And he was just here. He was just here. Well, my brother had died of an aneurysm. He was a paramedic and had been with people a lot in their passing. And my father was just absolutely convinced he was there. He wasn't looking for anyone else who had passed, just my brother. And I'm convinced my brother's energy was there.
Yeah.
And was there to help him make that transition from this dimension into another dimension.
See, I think this is all real. I don't have enough of a well-formed epistemology to label it or to name it. But the experiences that I've had in my life, from nearly dying on the one hand to having taken psychedelics to when I was younger, much younger, to simply to watching my wife give birth to three children and catching two of them myself, and just these breakthrough moments that there's more to this world than we ever imagined. It seems to me like, it's like you turn on the radio in the car and you think, okay, this is all the radio frequencies that exist. I'm sorry, it's 100,000th of all the radio frequencies that exist, or 100,000,000th of all the radio frequencies that exist, the entire dial. It's like we're seeing this little tiny slice of what's real. And there are all these, like you said, physics, there are objectively... if you could see using X-ray vision rather than visible light, you would see a completely different world. If you could see using ultraviolet rather than visible light, you'd see a different world. It's just the world that we think is real is really only a piece of it. And I don't think you have to be religious to believe this.
No, I don't think so either. And it makes me kind of sorry for my brothers and sisters who are so very, very conservative and think it's my way or the highway. And I keep thinking, oh, what consciousness you are missing.
Yeah.
What incredible beauty and what incredible splendor you're missing.
Well, and in many ways, what we've done is we've taken the mysterious, the awesome, the mystery, mm-hmm. and we've put it in a box. And every Sunday we mm-hmm. go and you know, worship in that box, and it's so much greater than that.
Or the converse is true, too. We decide we don't need any worship. There is nothing grander than us. We're the apex of all that is.
Right.
And we sort of worship ourselves, which I don't think there's anything wrong with seeing the beauty in human existence.
Oh, it's kind of a cultural and religious narcissism, you know?
It's, yes.
It really is. Marie, thank you for a very thoughtful conversation.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. We will be back here on All Hallows Eve on the Tom Hartman program. Also, we're heading up to an election. We can talk about Mitt Romney if you want. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And Frankenstorms. The media actually has mentioned global warming a couple times in the United States. Not much, but they're getting there. The bad and the very, very radiesthetically ugly, brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for your mind. The good. The New York Times. Yesterday, the Times editorial board officially endorsed the marriage equality ballot initiatives that will be voted on in four states on Election Day. In the endorsement, the paper urged residents of Maryland, Minnesota, Maine, and Washington State to, quote, not place their state so sharply on the wrong side of fairness, end quote. The editorial went on to say, quote, the freedom to marry is a fundamental right that should not have to be won or defended at the ballot box, unquote. Unfortunately, the sad reality in America is that marriage equality does, in fact, have to be put to a vote. Let's hope that more and more Americans realize that everyone should have the right to marry whomever they want and vote for marriage equality on Election Day. The bad. Vandals in Tennessee. Vandals in Tennessee placed a derogatory bumper sticker on the window of the Sumner County Democratic headquarters. The sticker reads, "The bro and his hoe gotta go," an obvious reference to President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama. Unfortunately, this sort of racially charged attack on the president is nothing new. Throughout the campaign season, other racially charged displays have included the hanging of an Obama effigy in a front yard in Texas and a depiction of the president as a witch doctor in New Jersey. These kinds of displays and these racially motivated attacks really have no place in politics or a modern and enlightened American society. And the very, very ugly, Mike Huckabee. Huckabee, the former Arkansas governor and presidential candidate, lent his voice to a new ad put out by Value Voters USA, an organization of Christian and non-denominational citizens who believe Americans should vote based on life, family, and faith, or at least that's what they say. In the ad, Huckabee argues that Christians across America must, quote, vote based on values that will stand the test of fire, end quote. Or, in other words, Huckabee is saying anyone who doesn't vote for Mitt Romney and his anti-marriage equality, anti-women's rights agenda is going to hell. Of course, Huckabee is the same man who has strongly opposed marriage equality and even pushed to amend the Constitution so it's to God's standards. But telling anyone who doesn't vote for Mitt Romney that they're going to hell? Now that is very, very ugly. That's incredibly ugly. Oh, man. Welcome back. Debbie in Lake in the Hills, Illinois. Hey, Debbie, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Well, I heard you talking about you regretting not saying those things to your dad, and I just want to let you know that he already knows how you feel. I became much more spiritual a couple years ago when a friend of mine gave me the name of a psychic down in Fort Myers, Florida, and I called her, and she was so spot on. I now follow her website. It's called The Mystical Moon. Mm-hmm. And she does a lot of teaching, and I've learned that I have a guardian angel by the name of Abigail. She's with me wherever I go, and we speak every day through different types of, you know, like the pendulum or divining rods. And so when I spoke to the psychic, Lori is her name, I had asked her about my dad, and she had told me things that she could not know. Like the nickname that my dad used to call me. He used to call me Stormy, and he was saying too that he regretted not being more of a father that he should have been, and so but they hear, I mean, I talk with them all the time. And so I just want you to know that, they're out there. They're all around you all the time. And if you just speak to them, they will hear you. And I'm sure your dad is comforted.
I believe that. I may use somewhat different techniques, but I do actually almost daily talk to my mom and dad. I mean, just when I'm alone out loud, I will talk to them. And to others who have passed, to Herr Mueller, a very, very powerful influence on my life. I honestly don't know, Debbie, if they're there or not, but it makes me feel better. And so just in the most, your own mental health kind of selfish way, I think that it's a good and healthy thing. Debbie, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. Interesting. Paul in Fairland, Oklahoma. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. With all this oil in the ground,
mm-hmm.
maybe they hid it in there so we wouldn't find it, But
could
I got a question for you.
Sure.
See all these oil wells throughout the oceans.
Yeah.
What would happen if we had a big earthquake, especially on the empty wells, and it knocked the lids off and then it started draining the ocean?
Yeah, it would be a disaster, and there's thousands of them in the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, I mean, isn't all that stuff put in the ground to insulate us from the core?
Well, I think actually, I don't think it was put there for a particular purpose. I think that it just is the consequence of vegetation 200, 300, 400, 500 million years ago settling to the bottom of the ocean or dying on land, and that, and then being covered by tectonic activity or time. And that stuff that was the plant matter that settled into the bottom of the oceans seems to have become oil, and that stuff that was the more cellulosic, more cellulose, the more fiber plant matter on land seems to have become coal. At least that's my understanding of the science behind it. And it's just this is the consequence of the Earth changing. And pull up to a gas station and put a drop of gasoline in your hand and take a look at it. You probably shouldn't do this. It's probably a very unhealthy thing to be in contact with. But if you did, you would literally be looking at a fossil, at something that was alive 400 to 500 to 600 million years ago. That's why we call them fossil fuels. And when you think of it in that context, it's really pretty amazing, that we're putting in our gas tanks. Literally every single drop is 400 or 500 million years old. They ain't making no more of it. And we've built an entire society and culture on these fossils. It's like, oh yeah, let's build a society on mastodon bones. That's gonna last a long time. And I mean, that's pretty much what we're doing. Paul, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Brad in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Brad, what's up?
Well, Tom, first I want to thank you for your program and your staff and what you give to all of us in intelligent television programming.
Thank you, Brad.
I just wanted to add something about hell, although,
mm-hmm.
I was surprised to hear all these religious comments, so I have to add my 2 cents.
Sure.
You may find it interesting that hell, when defined in the Old Testament or the Hebrew Testament, is Sheol. And what it
S-H-E-O-L,
means
S-H-E-O-L?
Common grave, Sheol, S-H-E-O-L.
Yeah.
And it's the common grave of all mankind.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means. And
right.
If we studied that further, we come into Greek, of course, or the New Testament. You may remember Grandma talking about Hades,
mm-hmm.
H-A-D-E-S. That's Greek, and when we look at that and do the research, we come up with the common grave of all mankind. So in a way, we're all going to hell, Tom. We're all going to a common grave.
Common grave, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And that's I wanted to put that across and also leave a piece of Ecclesiastes 9:5-6, which tells us about death a bit. When we're dead, we're really... there's nothing. We have no wisdom. We have no work. We have no devising of work. We're just dead. And you might want to, for the benefit of your listeners, have them check out that Ecclesiastes 9:5-6.
Okay. You got it. Brad, Shane is awarding to you a copy of Cracking the Code, How to Win Hearts, Change Minds, and Restore America's Original Vision. I'm putting you on hold. And Danielle will, he's on line 7, by the way, Shane. Danielle will pick you up and get the information to you. Jack in Cicero, Illinois. Hey, Jack, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, it's nice hearing from you. Listen, I'm going to add a little bit more to your religious after effects.
Okay.
In the book of Revelations, there is a thing known as the Lamb's Book of Life. And if your name is not written in the Lamb's Book of Life, you do not enter the gates of heaven.
Right.
You know, so, and everybody thinks, well, gee, you know, if I do good rewards, that's going to get me in. No, it doesn't. You have to confess your sins to the Lord Jesus, which is John 3:16.
Sure.
You know, because God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son.
Right.
But, you know, the major thing is people just don't turn around and look at it that way. They think, well, gee, I do a good enough life down here, and that's all that matters. But, you know, now, you know, you have to confess your sins to God, and Jesus is our arbitrator.
You know, I believe that that's true for somebody who believes that it's true. I mean, keep in mind that religions typically are the stories of individual tribes. I talked about this a little bit earlier in the week or last week. That you know, in Genesis, you got the story of Adam and Eve, and they had three sons, you know, Cain, Abel, and Seth. Cain killed Abel, and then after he killed Abel, he went off to a nearby village and married a woman who was living there. Where'd she come from? Well, you know, Adam and Eve weren't the first humans on Earth. They were the first members of the tribe that the Bible is telling the story of. And so if you consider yourself a member of that tribe or the New Testament, they kind of split off a whole new tribe, the Christian tribe from the Jewish tribe. If you believe that, I believe that that's your reality, and that probably is real for you.
Well, we look at Jesus was the 11th commandment, you know, of how he generated love.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one thing he spread about throughout his life here on Earth.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jack. In fact, I think that love is the most powerful force on Earth. Thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. It is 45 minutes past the hour, and thanks for listening to WCPT. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In fact, if matter is slowed down energy and the visible energy that we see as light is actually slowed down even more subtle energy, I think that most subtle energy of all is love.
And I'm taking my country back.
Taking us back to our progressive roots. You know, it was George Washington who said, I hope I shall ever see America a more progressive nation. He actually used that word on repeated occasions. I mean, we are the nation that came out of the Enlightenment. We are the nation of progressives. And Kathy Buchvar is with us, an attorney, mediator, a mom, and progressive candidate for Congress from the 8th District of Pennsylvania. She is running against one of the right-wing Republican crazies who has been named part of the Tea Party 10. And her website is Buchvar, BOOCKVAR.com. Am I pronouncing your name right, Kathy?
You are, Tom. Thank you so much.
Thank you. But it's spelled BOOCKVAR, even though it's pronounced as if the C was not there. Buchvar.
Correct.
And so I we're regularly featuring good progressive candidates on our program, giving people an opportunity to go to their website, see what's up, figure out how they can help out. So give us your elevator speech. What is the summary of who Kathy Buchvar is and why you are running for the U.S. House of Representatives?
Sure, and thank you so much for having me on, Tom. I'm a big fan. And to follow up on your last conversation with your last caller, you talked about politicians. I'm happy to say I've never been a politician, but I've always been in public service. So I've spent my career and my life working for the people of Pennsylvania, helping people with their jobs, helping disabled veterans get disability benefits, helping seniors with their Social Security and Medicare, helping middle-class families and women protect their livelihoods and their families. And that's what they're supposed to be doing down for us in Congress. And
yes,
that's what's been completely lost in the power struggles and the partisan charades. I want to bring it back around to us, Tom. I want to bring it back around to the people of Pennsylvania, and that's why I'm running.
Yeah, and I think that one of the reasons why it's so easy to make cheap shot jokes about politicians is because, in particular, the Republican Party has just turned Congress into a charade. It's You know, Harry Reid had to deal with more than 370 filibusters in the 6 years so far he's been the leader, the Democratic leader of the Senate. In that same 6 years, the last Democratic leader of the Senate was Lyndon Johnson. In that same 6 years, Lyndon Johnson dealt with one.
Wow.
And this is how crazy it's gotten. And so it is really important, I think, that people find out about people like yourself. We're talking with Kathy Bookvar, BookVar.com is her website, BookVar.com. And what do you see as the major issues in the race here, Kathy?
Well, I'm guessing it's very similar to what you've heard across the country. Certainly, the unemployment and, you know, struggling economy is number one issue. Although I should say, you know, I see the umbrella issue, and frankly, the voters see the umbrella issue as being what we started with talking about, which is the power struggles overtaking all substantive issues. And so with the Congress not working, you can't even get to jobs. You can't get to Medicare. You can't get to women's issues. But once you get – so my mediator background and, you know, my experience, you know, getting people to – you know, I'm used to going into the room with two parties who fully expect not to agree on anything and getting them to focus on producing the solution rather than, you know, just the power struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get past that, you know, certainly the citizens of my district care about, you know, boosting the economy. There's just so much unemployment from, you know, from every generation. And, you know, the other issues that are probably the biggest issues in my district are the Ryan budget is incredibly unpopular in my district, and my opponent voted for it twice. You know, they want to preserve Social Security and Medicare, not
the people in your district, not Paul Ryan.
Oh, exactly. I'm sorry. My district is very unhappy with the Ryan budget and with Paul Ryan.
Right.
And, you know, women's issues. My opponent has been basically on the wrong side of every issue relating to women's rights and women's, you know, ability to make healthcare decisions for ourselves and our families. He's probably the only anti-choice congressman ever to hold the seat, at least in the last 30 years. He voted to defund Planned Parenthood. He co-sponsored that bill with Todd Akin to redefine rape. He voted to weaken the Violence Against Women Act. So he's been bad for women. He's been bad for middle-class families, and he's been bad for seniors.
Right. And you will be good on all those issues.
Absolutely. You know, this is what I've spent my career doing. It's not like I ran for Congress and suddenly developed opinions on these. This is what I've dedicated my life to.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Kathy Bookvar, BookVar.com is her website, BookVar.com. And we're talking with Kathy Bookvar, an attorney, mediator, a mom, progressive candidate for Congress from Pennsylvania's 8th District. And check it out. She's running against one of the Tea Party 10 who is in Congress right now, who really hasn't, in the opinion of many of us, been doing such a good job representing all of us. Although he's doing a fine job of representing the Koch brothers and the other billionaires.
Don't forget Sarah Palin.
What about Sarah Palin?
Well, he got her endorsement, so I think he's doing a good job representing her as well.
Oh, my. Okay. Kathy, thank you so much for coming on the program and sharing your story with us.
Well, thank you, Tom, and I'd love to thank your readers. If any, you know, we've got 6 days to go, and by the way, my district was hit very hard by the hurricane.
Mm.
If anybody is able to be of help in these final 6 days, don't think it's too late. It is absolutely not. We could use your help by remote phone banking. If you're willing to come to the district, we'd love your help with door knocking. And if you're in a position where you can make a financial contribution, I hate the role of money in politics. I was in favor of campaign finance reform before I ever ran for Congress, but I've never been so much in favor of it as I am right now.
Yeah.
But I can't change it until I get there, and every contribution, small and large, is incredibly helpful in that regard. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, and people can learn more about it at your website, BookVar, BookVar.com, www.bookvar.com. Kathy, thank you.
Thank you, Tom. I wish you the very best. I really appreciate all you do.
Great talking with you. Coming up tomorrow on the Tom Hartman Program, a new bill about to come to law in Pennsylvania would require workers to pay taxes to their bosses for the privilege of having a job. Seriously. Collected by the state, given to the boss. I'm not making this up. I'm going to be challenging conservative Peter Ferrara of the Carlson Center for Public Policy on this one. Plus, my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science Rocks, and the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. When you show up, when you participate, not enough just to vote. Get active. Tag You're It. Don't forget to vote, though, too. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.